Welcome to ESIP's Global Economy Podcast. My name is Frederik Eriksen, and today I am speaking to Heather Gravey. Heather is the director of Open Society European Policy Institute here in Brussels. She's an expert on EU policy and have worked in the European Commission, where she advised the former commissioner on matters related to EU enlargement and democracy. She has held academic posts at the European University Institute and worked for think tanks such as the Chatham House and the Centre for European Reform in London. In recent years, Heather has written a couple of essays on populism and nationalism in Europe, and that is also where we are going to start our conversation today. Heather has also just launched a new paper together with a group called the European Reformists, arguing in favour of repositioning the EU towards the big challenges of today and the future, such as demography and climate change, and not getting stuck in old and dividing issues that can't be solved, or moving into the weeds of issues like treaty change and a grand constitutional redesign of the EU. Heather, welcome to the podcast.
Pleasure to be here.
I want to start off talking about the upcoming elections to the European Parliament, and I want to ask you how much damage you think the nationalists and the populists can do to the EU if they have a strong showing in the Parliament election. Among experts and observers, there seem to be some notable differences in how they view these risks. Some argue that the populists won't be able to cooperate, and consequently that they won't be able to have an influence on the policy debates and decisions that will be taken in the Parliament. They also have notable differences in views on pretty key issues. For instance, Italy's Matteo Salvini doesn't want the same thing as Hungary's Viktor Orban in migration policies, while others think that these parties and politicians actually can do a lot of damage just by invading the electoral base of the traditional power parties to the left and the right and make them much smaller and perhaps less capable of pragmatic compromise. So I wanted to ask you, what's your analysis, first, of the risk that these parties will make a strong showing, and second, what they can do in the European Parliament to challenge EU orthodoxy?
Well, in the short term, I think that the rise of populists in the European Parliament could be damaging to the functioning of the European Union. But in the long term, the European Union, I think, could become more relevant. So what do I mean by that? Well, in the short term, having populists not only in the European Parliament, but also in the European Commission for the first time, as well as around the table in the Council with the other member states, this could have a significant impact on the functioning of the EU. The European Union is a giant compromise-making machine which relies on consensus on many issues and on countries and individual politicians being willing to find the common ground between them. And that's something that populists, generally speaking, don't want to do. They look for divisions, they look for blame tactics, and they very rarely advance objectives which can be met through policies and funding and the kind of thing that the European Union does. So not only do they have different agendas, as you pointed out, they often don't have goals that could really be fulfilled through EU level action. And that's why in the past, MEPs from populist parties have tended not actually to do that much in the European Parliament. They take the money, often using it to finance their national campaigns. They also sometimes use it as a giant YouTube channel by recording their speeches and putting them up as publicity. But they don't tend to get involved in the legislative work, the committee work, amendments, all of the normal work of parliamentarians. However, what could happen in a parliament where there's no overall majority of mainstream parties and where there is also a rise, not just in the populists, but also in the Greens and the Liberals, which I think is quite likely. The risk is that you actually end up with a large blocking minority, where you have populist politicians that don't have strong goals that they want to achieve through the means of the European Union, but they're quite happy to block things, to drive a wrecking ball through European Parliament business. And that could have a very significant impact on how the EU functions, because if it's impossible to get legislation through the Parliament and the Commission might become more cautious about advancing legislation if there are populist commissioners in the college, then what we could find is the further intergovernmentalism, where the member states do deals among themselves to get action in vital areas. For example, if there's further crisis over the euro, if there are clearly issues that need to be dealt with rather fast, then what we could see is more intergovernmental deal-making outside the EU's treaties and outside the community method. And ultimately, that's not very good for the EU's functioning either.
Do you think there is a risk that not just that they're going to be able to form a blocking minority or damage the culture of compromise in the European Union, but perhaps also that they may attract other parties to basically come closer to their agenda, perhaps from the center-left and the center-right. Well, the center-left might be sort of appealing to the populists and the nationalists on economic issues, and the center-right may perhaps find common ground with the Salvinis and the Orbans of this world on issues around national identity, borders, the idea of the borderless Europe that seems to create anxieties also among center-right politicians these days. So do you think there's a broader risk here that they can actually mold the entire political sort of landscape in the parliament to go in the direction of the nationalists and the populists?
Well, the populists have already had quite a big impact on the center-right because they've attracted quite a few politicians to move in their direction, particularly on migration. And on the centre-left, they've appealed to those who argue that migrant workers are not good for the rights of the workers already in labour markets, which is not borne out by evidence, but that's an argument that you hear. However, I think this is still very much a short-term phenomenon. It's something that could get worse before it gets better, because it could mean a closing in of politics around just the populist agenda about migration, and essentially not migration as a policy issue, but migration as an identity issue, where the populists are fundamentally trying to drive a wedge between different parts of society by arguing that many people's interests are threatened by migration. But over the longer term, I don't think this will last, because for one thing, people start to tire of negative politics and hearing only about division and difficulty and blaming without any solutions being offered. Secondly, because the populists tend not to deliver on results. It's very hard to think of a populist policy which has delivered results over time and which has won popularity. Typically, the populists gain a lot of attention, a lot of headlines in the short term, but then they start to become divided among themselves, and often they turn quite corrupt once they're in power. And so I don't think it will last, but it can do a lot of damage in the short term. But in the longer term, I think people will start to see that Europe has got to provide solutions to the huge transnational challenges facing all Europeans, challenges in terms of digital transformation and the impact that has on labour markets, changes in terms of climate change and environmental degradation, and the big shift that is bound to come in how we run our economies, and also social change because of ageing populations, demographic change, and so on. And because these are enormous transnational challenges that no one country can manage alone, the European Union will have an evident role in tackling them. And the populists have nothing to say about any of these issues. They are in denial about all of them. And for that reason, the populists will lose their shine. The question is, do they do so much damage to democratic institutions during this populist moment when they focus everything on migration and they ignore these big transnational challenges? Will they do so much damage to democracy that it becomes impossible to form a democratic consensus around those challenges? I think that is the big question of our time.
I mean, I share your optimism, Heather, but I want to come back to this populist moment and why we're here. So in a debate in Florence recently, when the top candidates for the parties were debating ahead of the EU election, Frans Timmermans said, and I quote here, "I believe this is the first time since the beginning of European integration that this European Union actually could break apart." That is pretty strong. And I'm wondering why we are going through a period of turbulence in the EU right now, leading to almost an existential angst in some quarters. In the abstract, this should be a time when the EU could make a very good case for itself. You mentioned some of these issues yourself on geopolitical challenges, American withdrawal from international leadership, rising climate threats, economic transformation, and a lot more. All these points, I think, point to a stronger case for both European and international cooperation. But still, here we are talking about existential threats. So what's gone wrong?
There's been talk of the EU falling apart for 10 years now, since the beginning of the euro crisis, and then the financial economic crisis, and then through the migration crisis in 2015. We've had a decade of speculation about the disintegration of the European Union. But the EU hasn't disintegrated. And in fact, ironically enough, the main kind of obvious geographical disintegration of the UK leaving the EU has actually strengthened support for European integration in other countries. And you don't hear populists in other countries claiming that their countries should exit from the EU anymore. The UK has become such a sorry object lesson in how not to manage your international relations that nobody else wants to follow that example. There are still huge problems that the EU needs to tackle about itself, but I think it shouldn't do so by thinking first about itself. I think instead Europe's leaders at all kinds of different levels need to think about what do Europeans face over the next 20 years? What are the big challenges they face, the ones that cannot be dealt with only by each national government on its own, and focus on those, and then retrofit those objectives back into the EU system. So don't start with the EU system and tweak it at the edges and wonder about another treaty. That's a chimera, something that will never happen in my view, because politically it's impossible. And also that's not the way to start. The way to start is, what's the big challenge? Where do we want to get to in 2040? And then let's backcast to what we need to do between now and then to make that a better future, and what role the EU can play in that. How to use its exceptional resources of a community of law, a common budget, consensus, actually, it's very strong consensus building powers, and also its enormous diversity and open societies, which give it an opportunity to think about different responses from the US or the Chinese responses, for example, to digital transformation and climate change. So finding the European way on these issues is the greatest role that the EU could play. And I think it's entirely possible for the EU to do that if people focus on those issues. Disintegration is something that happens when people are neglecting the big issues, when they're not paying attention, and then it kind of happens by mistake. And I think Brexit is a good example of how exactly that happened in the UK, at least.
That also chimes very well with a paper that you and colleagues of yours have released very recently, a group called European Reformists. It's a paper where you provide thought-provoking ideas about the future of the EU and what it should do. And the essence of your argument is basically what you just said, that the EU has to re-equip itself with the capabilities to deal with the big challenges that are facing all of us right now, not just in Europe, but in many other parts of the world. And that's how you can make yourself relevant as an EU or a platform for international cooperation. So what are the big challenges that we are missing in Europe right now?
I think that the biggest challenges that the EU really needs to tackle are climate change, which is not a uniquely European challenge, but it's one where there's no global leadership from any other power. Secondly, it's digital transformation, which is affecting all societies, but where Europe has unique regulatory tools and other ways of managing the transition that could ease the pressure on labour markets and on people, on human beings. And also, Europe does face a demographic challenge, which is very different from that in the US or Africa, for example, where you have younger populations. We have ageing populations and very elaborate welfare states and pension systems in Europe that will need to adapt to a completely different demographic profile. And I think we can make that adaptation, but it means changing expectations by setting a very clear sense of direction. It's not that the EU can do everything, quite the opposite. In fact, many levels of government will need to be involved, and so will other sectors. The private sector and also civil society need to be very much involved in these transitions. But what the EU can do is to play a coordinating role, a consensus building role, a compromise finding role that keeps the public interest in mind. The EU's history shows it's actually quite good at serving the public interest through regulation, better than most national systems, in fact, at doing that. It has competition policy as well as trade policy at EU level. And there are resources, both money, but also in terms of kind of long-term planning, which allow the EU to set frameworks for policy that go across several changes of government. And that provides a continuity which allows for longer term thinking. And that's also easier to manage than in national governments. So now's the time for the EU to take advantage of these really major assets at regional level and use them to best effect. And that's the way to pull out of the politics of fear that are currently dominating through populism in the EU, is to get people to focus looking forward and think about how they can make the lives of their children and grandchildren better, rather than focusing constantly on what do I have to lose, who's going to come in and take my job and take my benefits and take my pension, which is what the populists are peddling.
Heather, thank you so much for joining the podcast. It's been a great pleasure talking to you.
You're very welcome.